right now. We're going to get this show started. You guys ready to get down? Are you ready to get funky? What'd I say? Funky!
It was the summer of 76.
Wow. What it is, cuz?
Still a virgin?
You don't want to know.
And a vacation we'd never forget.
Like my seashells?
I don't even know you.
So you meeting any girls?
Now, Drew Tate is turning 2 weeks.
Are you trying to break my door down?
Into a lifetime of experience.
Hi, I gotta go.
Yeah, I have to go too.
Bye.
Anything you want to know, I mean anything, you come to me, right?
Oh, okay.
What's the G-spot?
We're gonna have to work on that, Drew. Now, where's your party jams?
Come on, guys. Oh, where now?
These are corduroys, Drew. Really make noise when you walk. You can start a fire.
Dancing. He's making the scene.
Girl, I got a sweet tooth for your love.
Seeing the sights.
Yeah! Well, surprise, surprise, surprise.
Is everyone having a wonderful time?
Yes.
And turning every day into a celebration.
That's too nasty, but I can't help it. I'm nasty.
Get in the groove at the Inkwell.
Did you pop it?
No, we bought it.
Not the lobster, no nuts.
What's a clitoris? Recap and Gown, the podcast where four old millennials talk about the high school and college movies from back in the day when we were high school and college students to find out what made the grade and what should have been held back. Representing the class of 03, I am your co-host Crooks. Joining me this week and every week, he sings like an angel and drinks like a fish, the class of 04's own Big Hearn David Oscar Hernandez. What up, Dave?
Not much. You ever seen Hot Ones on YouTube?
I've never watched like a full, but I've seen plenty of clips.
Bobby Lesh bought the sauces.
I saw the photos.
let me tell you, it is unpleasant. So when you see people react in a crazy way, it's because it sucks. We did them all, tried them all. That last one, whoo boy, 2 million Scoville units. I thought I was going to melt, quite literally. Melt.
The photo recreations were very good. Who were you in that one? I saw all the side-by-sides with the actual celebrities.
Dave Grohl.
There you go. Yeah, they were good. That was, I wouldn't want to do that shit. No thank you, but you guys looked great. So, yeah, man. Enjoyed that.
It was fun. Like, the first five, there were a couple that were decent, and then just started to get progressively worse. One of them was like chocolate hot sauce. I'm like, ugh, gross. The second to the last one was watermelon hot sauce. Mm-mm. And was super hot. Disgusting. And the last one had no flavor, just hot.
Just heat.
Pure hot.
Don't get out of my life.
But I did it. And I think I handled it the best. There's a lot of crying and rushing to the bathroom with the other folks. But
I'd be crying.
It's tough.
I know myself enough.
It was a good challenge. Good challenge.
Well, I'm happy you did it and not me. Flying solo in Lone Star State, this podcast chief Black Republican and trivia correspondent from the class of 01, Dana Griffin. What up, Dana?
Not much. Hot Ones is great. We used to watch it like religiously, and then we stopped. One of the best that really just gets you going. Kevin Hart. I'm not a huge fan of him anymore, but that one is one of the early ones. Truly excellent. I'm pretty sure he's drunk. Nick Kroll does it, and he literally says he is drunk and is like hungover and has regrets for doing it that way. Yeah. Halle Berry, unfazed. Mm-hmm. Nothing is hot, and she makes through the whole thing. And it's like, what the fuck?
That's why I did.
Dax Shepard doesn't have taste buds.
There's few people who actually drink. Dave Grohl was drinking on the show. I don't know if that's not allowed for most people, but most people aren't like cracking beers or doing shots or anything during there, but Dave Grohl's like whiskey, a little bit of Coca-Cola, and then some hot and some spicy wings. So
you know, Gordon Ramsay has every
we watched it's both too of those spicy ones afterwards. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Thing to try to like he brought a donut. He tried everything and he hated every minute of it. And it was delightful.
God, there it's was the, it's the British palate. It's a weak palate.
There was a hip hop version of this show where instead of doing hot wings, they were doing shots. And I forget what that show was called. It was before the pandemic. I'm not sure if it still exists, but I just remember. Oh God, who was it? Maybe was Damon it Dash.
Shot ones?
No.
Genius shot
just
ones.
Just shots of different liquor. Like did they start with like a Malibu and then get to
it's they're just like your liquor of choice, but it's just like you're having a conversation about your career shots. And then every like 3 minutes, take a shot. And like, I think it might've been Damon Dash. There was somebody who like legit could not speak at the end and like his tongue stopped working and he tried to stand up and couldn't, his legs weren't working anymore. I'm just like, well, this seems dangerous.
That seems, it's like when you watch Drunk History and like partway through mm-hmm. people are like throwing up and you're like, oh, is this worth it?
Yeah.
Like this doesn't.
This was too much. But it was one of those guys who had like a very long career. And so it's like, yeah, we're going to talk for like 2 hours. You're taking shots every five minutes or whatever. Like they were wrecked by the end
of it. It's not like time boxed. It's like we're gonna talk forever long. Oh, you could someone could die.
Yes.
Well, the show's not on anymore.
I mean it might be. I just don't even know what to look for. But speaking of people like dying from alcohol, I do when we have my roll call for trivia each week, I send the trivia team like a little short story that has a bunch of trivia facts in it. This one was about industrial floods. And so there was a flood of beer in London, I think in like 1916.
Like the one of molasses in Boston where all those people
that
died.
Was the third one I talked about. The molasses one where 150 people drowned in molasses.
Yeah.
And then there was a whiskey flood in Ireland. Where no one died. It was a fire first. A fire broke out in a whiskey distillery. The casks all blew up and flooded the streets of Dublin. No one died from the fire or from the flood, but 13 people did die of alcohol poisoning from drinking the river of whiskey flowing down the street.
Yeah.
so there's that. Yeah, mm-hmm. that's some quality shit. No one died in the movie this week, but we are talking about The Inkwell from 1994. There were some people that could have died. You can rent it on Amazon, Apple TV, and Vudu. The synopsis via Rotten Tomatoes. Drew is a quiet 16-year-old still recovering from the trauma of accidentally burning his own house down. Drew's parents... I was okay, Dave. You ruined it for me. Drew's parents, Kenny and Brenda, take the family to Martha's Vineyard to vacation with their wealthy relatives for the summer. On the island, Drew discovers an upper-class black community that centers on parties held at a beach called the Inkwell. There, he falls for two different women. That last sentence could just be taken out. I mean, that happens, but like, it sounds like there's more should come after that. That pretty well sums up what the movie's about, I suppose. Dave, if you could give us a rundown of who's in this movie.
Well, there's the Tateses, Drew, Kenny, and Brenda, played by Lorenz Tate, Joe Morton, and Suzanne Douglas.
And don't forget Bubblegum Tate.
Oh, I forgot about Bubblegum Tate.
Bubblegum Tate.
One of my favorite Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah, that's right. Bubblegum Tate. The Futurama Harlem Globetrotters.
Yep, there's the Phillips, the Spencer, Francis, and Jr., played by Glenn Turman, Vanessa Bell Calway, and Dwayne Martin. Heather Lee, played by Adrian Joy Johnson, Harold Lee, Morris Chestnut, Lauren Kelly, played by Jada Pinkett, Evelyn Mary Alice. Dr. Wade is Phyllis Yvonne Stickney. Daryl is Marcus Redmond. The New York Dream Machine is a Chicago R&B group called Jade. I listened to a couple of their songs before.
Sure is.
And, it brought back some B96 memories.
Yes.
They were awesome.
Very much. They were dope.
And yeah, that's fine. That's enough.
Yeah, that about sums it up. Let's go around the horn and give some memories of the first time we saw this one. Dana, what do you got?
Sorry for a sound effect that just played. I think I had seen this movie. Now I I'm unclear. I think we were talking about this when you picked it, where I was just like, oh, like got it confused with the wood from other stuff. So it's just like, have I seen this? Maybe.
Perhaps.
But now I definitely have. Today and yesterday. I like to split these. The movie's not good, which I had a feeling this wasn't going to be. I like to watch it over a couple of days.
It's ups and downs.
I only have so much attention span for it.
Dave, memories for you?
This preview was on the TV all the time.
Was it?
I think
Okay.
this was distributed, maybe not by Disney, but what was Disney's adult, not really
Buena Vista?
Yeah,
Buena
Buena
Vista
Vista.
Pictures. That's right.
Buena Vista.
That's why
Okay.
this ad was everywhere trying to get people to see it. I didn't. So I saw it today. Not what I expected. Very interesting.
Okay,
Very
all
interesting.
right. Yeah, so I remembered watching this movie as a family, which I talked about when I picked it. In my mind, we watched it a bunch of times. I called my mom and talked to her about it, and she like very vaguely remembered this movie, mostly just the title. So like I think we might have only watched it once, but perhaps because of like the age I was when I watched it, it made a big impact on me. But she was like, I remember the name of that movie, but not who's in it or what it's about or anything else about it. So there's that. Maybe a one time for me as a kid. Dana, did it make the grade or should they have held us back?
This movie, what was going on in it?
Yeah, everything is the answer.
This is a great question. This is the question.
Too much. Too
Yeah.
much was going on, not enough. It's like it's one of those weird ones where it's like, God, if we could have just picked one thing and fleshed it out instead of we got
Yes.
all of the things
Pick a story.
barely. Like it was. Yeah, I just was like, what? And I knew we were going to be in for a problem when I was like, how long is this movie? I was like, an hour and 52 minutes? What in the
Saw
fuck?
it. I saw it too.
Too long. Yes, also too
Yeah.
long.
I was like, ooh,
Too
good. 90
long.
minutes. What the fuck?
Yeah, too long, too much, too little. I'll save this for later because we'll get this is our next thing. But yeah, I didn't know what was going on. I don't even want them to try again. Like it's not like one of those ones where I'm like, let's give this another go. No. You did a bad job and you fail. Like there's literally like there's not one thing. Maybe like Glenn Thurman is redeeming. I don't
Oh.
know.
Oh my gosh. All
Joe
right.
Morton's in it. I don't know.
Joe
Nothing
Morton
about
is
it
in
is
it.
good.
Joe
So I don't
Morton and his
know.
mole are both in this movie.
Yep.
Dave, did
Pop
it
of
make the
hope.
grade for you?
I don't know, man. There were parts where I was like, you could have taken that again and done it a little better. There were some weird kind of like there's a part where the grandma just waves and says, bye.
Grandma didn't need to be in this movie at all. She was useless.
Bye. And
Completely
just
useless.
who is
Like,
this
I'm like,
movie for? I think is a big
that.
question.
And there's a part where Joe Morton throws the little doll and just throws it right at himself. I'm like, do that again. Do that again. Listen,
One
this had an
take.
eight, it had an $8 million budget. Just
It
do it
did.
again. There's
Nope,
parts of
one
the
take.
story. We'll talk about the doll, but that take that out. You save 15 minutes and it's hour 35. And it's a different movie. It's a different
It's a
ball
whole
game.
different movie.
It's just a coming of age regular. He's just a weird kid. Yeah. Completely different movie. So it's not good. I did not enjoy it.
Yeah, I
It made me want to
mean,
watch. I love Lawrence Tate, though. It made me want to watch Dead Presidents again, and I'm going
yeah,
to.
go watch that.
But
Go watch South
that's,
Central. I mean, he's a quality actor.
yes, but not this
Doobie
film.
Brothers.
Nope.
So this is kind of a hard call for me. On the one hand, the acting in the movie is pretty good across the board. The chemistry. Oh, Dana, you
What?
disagree? Who was bad in this? I thought
So
it was
many
fine.
people.
I thought the
Okay.
acting was fine. The chemistry and like the interaction between the characters feels pretty fully realized and believable. On the other hand, there are some very serious tonal problems with this movie. And like Dana said, it felt like they didn't have a clear idea of what movie they were making. This one, it's like a solid D minus for me. Makes the grade, but like this should have been three different films, not one. And I'll kind of break down what they could have done to make this workable, but yeah, I thought the performances were just fine. Just fine. Before we get into the recap and the segments, do we have any fun facts on this one?
The only fun fact I could find, and I think it goes to my point, is that one of the screenwriters didn't like the final project so much that he was like, take my name off of it, and replaced it with the fictitious Tom Ricostronza.
Okay, I saw that name. Oh, like, not, the fuck?
Not that Alan Smithy guy that the union makes you do if you want to take your name off it.
No, this Alan is Smithy? Trey Ellis was like, okay, please replace my name with Tom Ricostronza.
I saw that name as one of the writers, and I'm like, huh, for a black film, huh? Tom Ricostronza.
Yep. Okay. He was like, take my name off of this piece of garbage. Yikes. Which I would have loved to know. Like, it, you know, it does happen. Like, I think like a prime recent example of a movie where, hey, that might not have been what was on the page. Was it Don't Worry, Darling? Whatever the fuck that one was with Harry Styles.
That's and one.
That was like a blacklist, like hot script. I was like,
it was promoted as such.
Yeah, I was excited to watch it. And I was like, there's something in here that could have been good. This?
Same.
This one isn't it.
No.
This movie? I'm not getting that. I don't feel that way. But I could see where maybe, okay, this got off the rails somewhere. And I don't.
The second they pull out a ventriloquist dummy, you should be like, nope, you know what? Let's think about this first. Ask why.
I couldn't even look at that little fucking doll. I don't even know what it looks like. You could tell tell me it looks like anything. And I'd be
he's
like,
got
sure.
a name.
I couldn't look
we'll
at
talk
it.
Talk about Iago.
More like the Stinkwell. It stinks.
Okay.
Are we gonna talk about the
had
name?
I had to do it.
We could talk about the name. Let's just get into the recap and the segments here. We're bleeding over. And I have to pick a little spot for our ad break.
Okay.
So, what genre are we going to call this movie? Is it a drama? Is it a comedy? Is it a coming of age movie? Is it a romance? What category would this movie live in at Blockbuster?
Blockbuster. Is there melodramatic telenovela? Like, it's almost telenovela. That
parts of it certainly are.
That's what I think it is.
Forcing me to, like, gun to my head, like, pick one, you son of a bitch. I guess it's more coming of age than anything else. Not romance. Not very romantic.
There's romance in it.
No, I know. They try, but it's not.
Yes,
very
there's
some romance in it.
Not very romantic.
There's some drama. At least.
More comedy than drama. So
I only laughed comedic. At one part.
I know, but
I don't think I'm supposed to laugh at that part. I laughed at one part.
No, but there's a couple parts that were supposed to be like serious. When they were fighting on the tennis court, was that supposed to be serious?
I busted up laughing. I don't know.
No. I think it was supposed to be funny. So
I laughed so hard.
This is definitely a comedy. The way that those guys went back and forth. It's a comedy. Hilarious.
It's a melodrama. There's almost a part of me that I'm like, is this camp now? That I know everybody misuses the word camp. But, like, did you watch May December?
No. I'm aware of it. Did not want to watch that.
No, but it's actually pretty good. But you know, like, going into it that, like, or maybe because I knew going into it what to expect from it, but there's, like, certain parts of, like, you're like, this isn't good. And you're like, oh, it's not supposed to be, like, they're playing up a certain, like, genre of film. And that's where I'm like... Mm. That's not what's happening.
I can get down with that. Like, I can love a solid satire. That's just not what this
was. It's subtle. I will say May December is a subtle satire. I will say certain parts of it are meant to be satiric.
You want to see quality satire? Watch Beautiful Disaster, because oh boy, it was on How Did This Get Made last week. It is. It's a romantic comedy that very much starts off like a conventional romantic comedy. And then by the end of it, you're like, oh, no, this has been like Wet Hot American Summer level satire for the last hour plus. No. Like, it starts off pretty conventional and then shit gets weird. And it's just like, we're steering so far into this skid. We're making
named after the
an absurd
the 311.
Film.
There's a 311 song called Beautiful Disaster.
Probably.
Let's pay a couple bucks for that. And no, that's not what that movie is.
We could do it for the pod. They're in college. So we could do that for the pod. I might pick it next.
It's like the movie Teeth. Did you ever watch that? Ever see that movie?
No, because I'm terrified of that. But
I'm funny. Aware of it again. It's like meant to, like, people I think thought we were getting like a horror movie and like took it really seriously. My friend and I were fucking cracking up. And I think everybody
Jennifer's
was
Body. Jennifer's Body is the same thing. Like, they thought it was a real horror movie. This is a fucking comedy. This is what I'm talking about when I say this movie should have been three different movies. Like, there is a wacky teen sex romp in here if you want to make that movie. They just didn't do it. There's a serious drama about race and politics in this movie and what it means to be black. They didn't do that. There is an adult comedy about two dudes who couldn't be more different but are stuck together on vacation. They didn't do that movie. So, like, that's a tender story about finding your first love. They didn't do that.
And then there's one about, like, you know, there's the family dynamic of two sisters, one marrying a black Republican. Like, you could have focused on the sisters.
No. They weren't sisters. That was
her
brother.
Yes, they are.
No. Glenn Turman is the wife's brother. That's her sister-in-law.
I thought they were.
I thought it was the other way around.
Would have made more sense if that was.
Wait. So who out of the parents are related?
The Drew's mom is Glenn Turman's sister. And that is their mom, the grandma that's there.
Nope. I thought they were sisters and
would have been
brother.
Better. That's what I
brothers
thought.
Brothers in law. Okay.
That's what I thought. But there were, when he first meets her, he's like, ah, my little sister. I'm like, oh, word? Like, that's what
we're. But he also is like saying how hot she looks.
He does whistle at her.
That's why I thought that it was like the sisters with different husbands.
Yeah, it would have made more sense. Would have been a better movie. They didn't go that route. So, yeah, like.
There's also, like, we haven't talked about it yet, but the kid's weird. There's, like, a black version of, like, we need to talk about Kevin going on. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a parental drama happening.
There are movies here that could have been developed and become something worthwhile. And instead, they just, like, stack them all on top of each other, and none of them really get the screen time they deserve to develop and become anything. So, I don't really know where I'd put this movie. I don't know. I might lean more towards this being like a dark comedy. But, like, again, I only laughed at that one part.
Funny about this movie. It's weird.
Well, they tried to make it very funny with something that happens to Harold. And I'm like, no, this is not funny at all. So, yeah. Now, fucking
wait, who the fuck is Harold?
Morris Chestnut.
Oh.
Yeah, cheating ass Morris Chestnut.
I just, in my notes, Morris Chestnut, what are you up to? Again, there's also that whole, there's so much.
Movie. There's too many things.
And then we haven't even talked about Jada Pinkett.
She's in it as herself.
Goodness.
Now, Dana, you brought it up. Is something wrong with Drew? Like, when I first watched it, I'm like, oh, he's on the spectrum. And I'm like, no, I don't think he is.
He's something. I finally, like, it kept bugging me. And I finally, like, got to it, like, I guess I think it was towards the end of my first watch, where I was like, is Lorenz Tate the black Selma Blair? Is this the inspiration for Cecile in Cruel Intentions?
Blelma Blair, huh?
But, like, I mean, there's something about it where you're like,
Blelma?
No 16-year-old, like, because she plays a 14-year-old, and you're like, this 14-year-old has brain damage. There are things that Lorenz Tate does that you're like, something's wrong with this boy's brain. Like, you're 16. I get he could be weird. I get he could be nerdy and sheltered. I get it. I was in honors class. I was with a bunch of fucking weird kids since I was, like, 12. I was probably at some point that weird kid before I got to, like, middle school. We're not at 16. Like, there's just shit where I'm just like, were you not a child, Lorenz Tate?
The way this dude danced at that like party, the first part, I'm like, oh, not only are you not clapping on the beat, I've never seen somebody clap with their hands all the way open before. I'm like, how do you clap like
Hercules? Hercules.
Yeah, I'm like, what is happening here?
Weird sounds he's making all the
time. Like, I don't know what is something's wrong with him.
So that was like the most jarring part. So when you tell me that acting is good, if Lorenz Tate is the lead character driving force in this film. He is not good. He is not. And I'm like, was he 75 when he was playing? Because his rent state could be 14, 42, or 62. I don't know. The man does not fucking age. So I was like, oh, Lorenz was playing this when he was 45. But no, he was like 20. So, yeah. Like, he's not that far removed from being 16, but I was just like, it's so bad. It was, like, so jarringly, like, oh, yeah, we better find out that, like, he's on, he's
something wrong with him.
I don't know. I would prefer that. And he's got multiple personalities.
If this was a decade before, his parents probably would have sent him away somewhere. Most likely. But this is
the 70s. Go to a sanitarium.
A lot of those places have been shut down because of, you know, terrible conditions and exposures in the media. Yeah. But something's wrong with him, 100%. This was a time when a lot of parents were in denial. La 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 la. Let's just keep pushing him to do stuff. Eventually, he'll either become something or he'll be 18 and he'll be out of the house. It won't be our problem anymore. Very different kind of parenting now. Parents would notice and try to do a lot more, and there's more intervention involved. But here, the parents are just like, that kid weird. He's a weirdo. And they're like, yep, he's a weirdo. And what do they do about it?
We've talked about Rana and Beverly on the podcast before. And there was something that Beverly said at one point where she's like, we medicate these kids. You know, we give them therapy. We label them. We diagnose them with autism. What just happened to weird kids? When I was like, we had weird kids. We don't have weird kids anymore. It's like, he's a weird kid. Like,
Then in the mid-90s, they started to, you know, bring rifles to school and start offing their classmates. Then
they got to talk about weird kids now.
We need to intervene. We need to make this known, and we need to do something about it. And it's still happening. Nothing that is known. Being done is helping. Yeah. It's helping. No. It's still happening. So
yeah.
I don't know. Ooh. Was it the answer? So just let it be weird.
That's a whole other conversation.
Let the weirds be weird.
Yeah.
Let it be weird.
Let it be weird. I think the thing in this one is like, you think that at some point they're gonna get to the bottom. And I did not read through the notes, so my apologies if I'm skipping ahead. Sorry, I'm not prepared for this. I actually watched the movie and took notes this time, unlike last week where I was like, I just watched it barely.
We just had to explain Bikini Model Academy to you.
No, it was a masterpiece. A masterpiece, only the strong. How dare you?
No, I watched it. No, but the thing in this one is like, you think they might get to the bottom. You're like, oh, this is like very progressive because he's gonna go to see a therapist. The parents are involved, and all you get from that interaction is like, Joe Morton is pissed that he quotes dead white guys, and what it is he quotes Shakespeare. That's no.
And then you get, come on and braid my hair. Because we get that too. So the movie typifies Drew being a weird kid by giving him this. Was it a ventriloquist dummy? Was it like a marionette? Like a wooden doll?
I wouldn't look at it. I don't know.
Itty bitty, squishy, stuffed something or other.
I didn't know if it was hard or soft.
I do think it, again, I wouldn't look at it.
He squeezes it a bunch.
It's just stuff of nightmares. It's soft. The face, though, face is like a Mr. Rogers puppet face, like hard, whatever the fuck is.
Hard wood, whittled wood.
Hard wood, yes, like a light carved. And those puppets are the stuff of nightmares. Like, get new ones.
It looks like one of those what are the punching nun thing?
Yes, you know, the punching Judy thing.
The punching Judy, yeah. Yes, I'm like, what the fuck? So he has this dummy doll thing. That's weird. But, you know, if you had a thing when you were a kid and you still have it now, that happens sometimes. I've watched enough seasons of, you know, Married at First Sight, 90 Day Fiancé, whatever, where somebody has, like, a scrap of a blanket left and they sleep with it every night. Okay, fine. He talks to this thing. And has like full conversations and then responds back as though it's talking back to him.
Yeah, loudly.
There's moments where he's okay. So his dad is like, we're not bringing that fucking thing on vacation with us. He brings it anyway in a bag. Mm-hmm. And there are times where apropos of nothing, he's like, yeah, I know it's stuffy in there. Just pipe down. And I'm like, okay, you're just on your bike driving around town. Like you're not even like, you shouldn't be thinking about this thing.
Like, again, I don't know if this was a choice by Lorenz Tate, the writing, the direction. Again, I don't know who to blame here. But yeah, there's moments where you're just like, I think he would know it is weird and inappropriate to be talking loudly to an inanimate object. Like, mm-hmm. I think it'd be fine if he was just like kind of muttering or whatever.
No, that's even weirder to me. Him muttering to himself all day.
I think that's right. I think that's the correct. I think you gotta be muttering and just like, you know, giving it a look. You know, like it just was like too. He knows it's weird. Like he has to know it's weird.
He does because he hides it from the therapist at first.
Exactly.
If you were making this movie where that was like the center story, all you do is have somebody come in and like do the voice of Iago, and then he doesn't talk out loud. It's all in his head, back and forth conversation. That works a lot better than this. It's like,
Did they not have the budget for like voiceover ADR? Like, I don't understand how like.
I don't want to know how bad the ADR that they would have done.
It would have been awful.
I'm glad that
it would have been awful.
I would have loved it. Considering the sets were so obviously sets. They were so bad.
Yes. This is a soundstage. This is all a soundstage.
Yeah,
yes.
Nothing wrong with a little internal monologue for a kid.
Yeah,
totally fine. The point where it gets to be too much when you start talking to things.
Mm-hmm.
We have to talk about that. We have to.
And the things are talking back to you. Like that's
and only you can hear it. Yeah, it's not good. Mm-hmm. Not good.
We got to talk about Drew. That's what I'm saying.
We got to talk about Drew.
I mean, it just
interesting movie.
Have you seen that movie? I'm gonna pick one. I've never seen it. Deal with it. Enjoy, guys.
I've seen it.
Bow and arrow. Not a gun.
I've not seen it, but
it's terrifying.
We'll do it.
We'll figure it out.
So that's where the movie starts, and I'm trying to think when the movie started, did Joe Morton say something about Lorenz Tate burning the house down, or did we find that out later on?
It is I was taking pretty good notes, but I cannot search through them. I think it is like
there's a part where he tries to light the stove and everyone like freaks out.
That's at the house. It's
But like did we know before that he burned their house down?
Yes.
Okay.
The aunt and uncle bring it up, but I also feel like it was offhandedly mentioned before. But I think like it is somewhat a big plot point.
Yeah.
Could the movie just have started there?
Yes. The movie should have started with the house like smoldering. Yeah. And then or just show the opening credits, like show the house burning down and what happened that led to that.
The boring ass opening credits that were literally just type on a black screen. Mm-hmm. With BT Express's Do It Till You're Satisfied playing.
Yeah. For a long fucking time.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever. Again, they probably didn't have the budget, but just have some like fire trucks and just someone like just using a smoke machine in the back. Like
even just like a siren sound would help. Yes. And like voiceover of people putting fire out.
God, yes.
But yeah, they really kind of buried the lead there. And it's talked about a couple of times, but like I think he burned the house down, and so like the family had to go and stay with her sister her brother and mom for a little bit while the house gets fixed up or whatever.
Well, but they also the opening is like him riding away on his bike, running away to where we never know.
Away.
It's just I feel like to set up the fact that he has a Ferris Bueller Rube Goldberg style.
God,
I'm asleep in bed situation. So their house is still existing. Their house still stands.
Didn't burn it down.
He is running
it up.
Away from it. Yeah, burned parts of it.
Burned it up.
But he's going. You're like, oh, he's running away from something. But then like literally, it's Joe Morton in the kid's bedroom, and he thinks his son is asleep, and then he just reappears. Does he jump through the window? Like that was also I was like,
where was he? The boy has no friends. Like, where the fuck were you?
This opening thing of him riding a bike, talking to this little gremlin doll for no reason. Like it's truly for no reason.
You can cut that whole shit out. Cut that whole shit.
Why the fuck did we do this?
Like, you can cut the whole first 10 minutes and just have it start with them getting to Martha's Vineyard. It's fine. You don't need to start off with that preamble.
Yeah. It was so weird.
And we're in Martha's Vineyard. This is 1976. I was trying to place the year, and I couldn't tell until they brought up all the bicentennial stuff. Because there's a part.
It tells you it opens in 76.
Oh, I watch these while I'm working. So I'm looking up and down a lot. So it's like I miss visual things sometimes. But they they're in Martha's Vineyard, and they're there to visit with family and spend a couple of weeks. And I, maybe this is me being a moron, I did not realize that there were Black people in Martha's Vineyard. Didn't even know.
I learned about Blinyard. It recently.
Martha's Blinyard.
Yes.
Martha's Blinyard.
Right, exactly.
I think in most things, okay, I truly don't know the history, but I feel like I had heard that it like may have started as like a Black retreat, and then like white people are like, oh, this is nice.
That's how it always works out.
We're going to take this
every time. But the way that Spencer, Glenn Turman explains it is like the reverse. They go to the beach, they go to the Inkwell, and
don't love the name.
Don't. And I'm certain they called it that because it's Black people there. Uh-huh. I'm 100% sure that's why they call it that. Mm-hmm. But he says that like Black people started coming to this beach at the turn of the century, so like 70 years ago. And then once they showed up, the white people left and went to other beaches. Mm. So in my mind, I'm just like, yeah, to me, I've never been, but to me, Martha's Vineyard has always sounded like the whitest place in America. So like, I don't know if that's just on me for not realizing, or if like things have just changed dramatically from the 70s and it is super white again. I don't know. But I would think that like you would go to like, in Virginia, like Newport Beach. Or what's the other one in Virginia?
Newport News, Virginia Beach.
Yeah, Virginia Beach, like where Pharrell and them are from. Like that was, I would think that would be where you would go. And they've got.
Or the Outer Banks in all of Carolina.
There you go. Well, they've got on Bravo. I don't watch it. I watch a lot of Bravo, but not this one. But they've got, it might be called Summer House Martha's Vineyard. They've got Summer House, and then they have Black Summer House. And I think that's in Martha's Vineyard. So I guess it, Blummer maybe Blossom. This does check out. But we also, I never got a good impression for why Drew didn't want to go to the fucking beach for two. It's summertime. Go to the beach for 2 weeks. He's like, I don't want to go to that shit. And like, they allude to it a couple of times, basically saying his dad told him he was going to hate it. So he hates it. But like, what 16-year-old boy is like 2 weeks at the beach? That sounds fucking horrible.
I don't.
Didn't check out to me.
Like it doesn't.
Sounds like
it doesn't make sense. He's
a bit of a cuck, if you ask me. Can't have fun at the beach when you're 16. Beta male cuck.
But even when they get there, his cousin, who seems fun, is like, all right, man, like get changed, let's go to the beach. Like, I don't want to go to the beach, I just want to stay in the house all day. And I'm like, what? Like, you're here now. You're here. It is sunny. There's girls there. Like, no, I just want to stay in the house, talk to my fucking doll all day.
Yeah,
like,
right.
What?
Because there's no video games. I don't see no Pong anywhere. Yeah,
you got a Pong
there. Nothing to
or
do.
Like, it feels like it's always had his nose in a book. Like, because we get that line later where he's like always quoting dead white people. Okay, well then have him reading books, and like that's why.
Yes.
He and the dad don't connect or something. Because there's also like a whole thing about he and the dad doesn't know how to talk to him or whatever.
We'll talk about that. Yeah.
But yeah, it just seemed, and like the cousin is cool. And I feel like you have no friends.
None. You have the none friends.
Fucking Iago, the gremlin doll, does not count. Yeah.
No.
And no. Your cool cousin, who does not have to spend time with you, is like, I'm going to hate, and like constantly trying. Also, this is not a world where this happens, because I think that cousin would have been like, fuck no, mom. I'm not bringing that weirdo around my friends. Get the fuck out of here. Right?
Well, you know, like, let's dig into these relationships, because like the movie is really just a study and a whole bunch of different like interpersonal reactions. So we've got Drew and Junior. Junior's the cousin. I'm kind of happy they didn't go with the low-hanging fruit of Junior being like, I'm cool, Drew's lame, I don't want to hang out with him. It felt like, what was that movie, Airborne? Where it's like, yeah, it'd be really easy to make like Seth Green the dork and this new guy cool and is hanging out with his cousin. And Seth's like, no, we're cousins, we're friends, we get along. Of course I want to hang out with you.
But his friends like, kind of take that role, don't they? A little bit. Yes.
We watched it.
Oh, we sure did. The surfer guy goes to Cleveland and does rollerblading down the devil's.
Yeah, there's, There's no surfing in Cleveland. He does like, yeah, he.
I remember Seth Green is a goth in a basement.
That's the one.
Okay, that's all I remember.
But there he's are not two a goth. Where he's goth in a basement. There's Idle Hands where he's a goth in a basement too.
That's true. Different. But yeah, like I, okay. It would have been very easy for them to make this the standard. I'm cool. You're not. My friends are not gonna want to hang out with you. Like mom is forcing me to hang out with you. Whatever. They didn't do that. I'm happy they didn't. And it felt like Junior legit liked Drew, but wanted him to be cooler just so he could like fit in with his friends and stuff, which feels pretty noble. Makes sense to me where he's like, hey man, I like you, but like anybody else gonna, so like, let's fix you up and make you likable. And I wondered if the movie ever told us, are they the same age or is Junior older? I couldn't get a grip on that part of things.
I think Junior might be like a little older, but not by much. I don't know. That was the hard. Yeah, that was the hard age to figure out, because they definitely always say Drew is 16.
Drew is 16.
If we're just going by muscle tone,
he's bigger.
Yeah. He looks bigger. He looks stronger.
And we see he's got friends who have a car, so we know that he's at least of driving age and they're driving around and shit. But like, it's at times it feels like they're the same age. It feels like they're interested in the same girls, they're interested in the same music, fashion, all those things. At other times, it's like Junior is a few years older and like putting his cousin up on game that he should have known by now. Or it's like, oh God, like, but when I was your age, I knew all of these things. You don't know any of them. Let me like sort things out for you over these next 2 weeks. So yeah, I'm a little bit unclear on the age part of it, but Junior has these couple of friends. They are just good natured knuckleheads. It's not that they don't like Drew. It's that they don't really respect him. It feels like, it's not like they don't like him. But it's just like, man, this guy's kind of a loser. Like, if he gets embarrassed, we're going to laugh at him. We're not going to, like, hold him up. We're going to set him up to kind of sink or swim. And if he sinks, like, I'm not throwing him a life preserver. Was basically how it felt to me.
Yeah. They're also not a lot. They just giggle, like, the whole time.
I think we're supposed to understand they're high as fuck. Like, they didn't ever show them smoking or anything, but like the way that they laugh, I'm like, well, that's not a regular laugh. That's like, you're stoned as fuck. Yeah. I think that's what was happening there, but of course we don't know. Cause the movie, putting a drug comedy on top of this would make it even more bloated. So the other relationships, you've got Drew and Kenny. Kenny is Drew's dad. There's a lot of strain in this relationship. The movie didn't really do a great job of fleshing it out, but we have a very good friend who I have always said his dad wanted a different son than the one that he got. His dad's very manly, doesn't look it, but is very traditionally masculine, had a full like wood shop in the basement, works on cars all the time, probably owns several guns, I'd imagine. And his son was just like very artsy, like just not the rough and tumble kid that this dad wanted. And it felt like that was the same thing here, where it was kind of like, you know, we'll talk about Kenny in a little bit here, but it felt like he wanted a kid who was like him, like aggressive and street smart and, you know, not going to put up with shit from anybody. And instead he got this weird kid talking to a doll all day. And it's just like, oh my God. So I felt like that kind of put some strain on their relationship to the point that I think Kenny doesn't like him at all. Like he seems irritated and annoyed by him all the time until the end when he doesn't. But
I think he still loves his son. He goes fishing.
I think he loves him. I don't think he likes fishing. Him. Yeah. I think he loves him, but he doesn't like want to spend time with him.
They go fishing.
I think dad wanted to go fishing to get the fuck away from Glenn Turman.
I think it's one of those things where it's like you'll see in movies now where it's just like you have to connect with him on his level. Like in this day, like Joe Morton's like, these are the things that I do and the boy's going to do them with me.
do what I do.
But also, what does Drew do besides talk to that little gremlin? Because we don't see it. And ride a tandem bike.
Yeah, he rides a bicycle made for two. That's it. With no friends.
The fuck do you need two seats for? What is happening? Explain that. That's a good, that's something that should be explained to me.
Right? Where did this fucking bike come from? I don't know. So we've also got Drew's parents and their relationship. I was a little bit more interested in them than everyone else in the movie because, like, it feels like they got together and then either one of them changed or they both changed. And there's not like outright hostility from one to the other. But it feels like there's something lingering just under the surface that has put some distance between them. And the movie is too busy doing 85 movies to tell us what that thing was.
So I think, even though I've just, you know, recently learned that Brenda, Drew's mother, is the sister of the person I just kept calling Unk. Uh-huh. I'm like, Unk's going crazy in here. Okay, so learning well, that always. She's Glenn Durman's sister. Mm. I think the big thing is, and why I don't think the mom likes, loves, isn't too fond of Brenda anymore, is, you know, they're Black Republicans. They're like well-to-do.
Well, he is. Is she too?
I think they're like meant to be upwardly mobile.
Okay.
Social, like trying to do that type of lifestyle.
The Jack and Jill track.
Yes. I think Brenda fell in love with Kenny. He was different. He was a Black Panther. I know we're going to talk about it. But, you know, like, I think like there's a, ugh, why did you have to go like this route? Couldn't you just married another nice Black Republican politician type whose summer's on the, you know, like, I think there was a little bit of that. I think there might be some resentment on Kenny, Joe Morton's part of he had to grow up and give up being a Panther and leading a different life. He's a weird kid. Like, I think there's just like a lot of, man, life isn't the way
I gave that up for your ass.
Yeah. Life isn't going the way I want, you know, like, and there's, resentment a little bit, but again, they don't, you're right, they don't dive into it. When they're like reconciling on the fucking jetty, I'm like, what?
It felt unearned. We're gonna talk about that. That shit felt unearned. So yeah, I think I'm in alignment with you here, where it's like, it almost feels like so Kenny, as Dana said, is a former Black Panther. He's still fairly militant, I would say, in his attitudes. And it seems like Brenda isn't really on that path. And so I thought about it and I was like, okay, this is 1976. They have a 16-year-old son. So at the absolute earliest, they would have gotten together in 1960. Yeah. Probably it was more like mid to late 50s when they got together. So like, I could see it being a case where they got together and then shortly thereafter, Kenny got woke and Brenda was like, nah, I'm straight. Or they both were. And then once they had kids, like Brenda moderated and Kenny didn't. But like, it doesn't feel like this is who they've been all along. Because if it is, I don't know how they would have gotten together in the first place. It just doesn't.
Yeah,
it's, you know, it's remember that episode of The Fresh Prince where their like Black Panther friend shows up and it's like they used to have African names. He was what, Adebola and what? It's like, okay, I get that. You guys were that. Now you're rich Black Republicans. Like, I get how that happens.
I don't think Uncle Phil was a Republican, was he?
I think so. When he ran for judge, I think he ran as a Republican. Pretty sure. I'm going to go back and rewatch, but I think he was. But either way, like, It feels like either a change happened somewhere along the way. They were either both militants and he still is and she's not, or they weren't when they got together and then he became. But the movie didn't really let us know exactly what the underpinning of this weird tension was between them. I definitely thought they were going to get a divorce. They had that big fight on the beach. Kenny broke the land speed record running away from her. And then later on, Lauren is like, so who are you going to live with when your parents split up? So not if, but like when they get a divorce, who are you going to live with?
Oh, so yeah, wild.
That was, and frankly, that argument they had, I'm going to say it, that was well acted. The argument on the beach the parents had.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Where she's like, this the is, parents are bad actors. Just Lorenz Tate is terrible. And he's like the linchpin of the film.
Yeah, her point was like, this is about you having a 16-year-old son you don't know how to talk to, and having a dashiki you're afraid to take off. And I was like, oh, that cut deep. Like, yeah. This is, you've been meaning to say that for years now, and it finally came out in this moment. And then again, he became Usain Bolt and sprinted across the entire beach.
I was like, dun, 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 dun,
dun. Very good. So then we have Kenny and Spencer, who are the two dads here. They really should have had a real fist fight. There's been a lot of times that I've watched reality shows, and I'm like, just let these two characters like get into a legit fist fight until they're done fighting, and then things are going to be okay. The fight that they had, that, as Dave pointed out, was on the tennis court, it felt so out of place in this movie. They're playing tennis. Spencer is like, well, you probably don't know how to play this game on account of you're black. And then Kenny is like, well, I said I haven't played in a while, but Kenny just schools the fuck out of him. Yeah.
He's a hoodlum.
We'll talk about him being a hoodlum.
Okay.
But like, yeah, it's just like, it's very much like, oh, I'm assuming you don't know how this game works. Also, I'm smoking a cigarette in one of those long black cigarette holders while we're playing. And I'm like, that seems like a bad idea. But he starts getting beaten. Spencer does. And then he's like, I'll put $100 on this game. And Kenny's like, no, man, we're playing for fun. And the one thing that I kept on coming back to is, Spencer supposed to be an alcoholic? Like, is he drunk all the time? Because the way that he delivers these lines is like, you better be fucking drunk.
Like, it's a drink problem.
Yeah. It seems like he's got a drinking problem.
There's a morning after where he's just really struggling, and
yeah,
I think Lorenz Tate tries to like light a match to start the burn.
That's when
the stove,
yes,
because and he's just like, don't do that. Oh boy. Oh no, it's the morning.
It's the morning.
Well, it's the, because it's the morning after they get in the fight about like MLK and like Malcolm X, and he is literally just like pouring brown liquor into like a little snifter and just downing it and then filling it again. And he does it like six times in the scene.
It's a lot
I was
of
like,
times.
You fucked. You drunk.
It's,
what's up,
it's nuts.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. So they have this argument because basically, Kenny is beating Spencer at tennis. Spencer either has an ankle injury or fakes an ankle injury to like stop playing. And then he just accuses Kenny of hustling him. And Kenny's like, well, I said I haven't played in a while, not that I don't know how to play. Like, you're the one that made that assumption. This apparently like pisses Spencer off in a way that I did not understand. And now we have to fight. And the argument they have is legit. Kenny calls Spencer an Uncle Tom, which is grounds for felony assault. Spencer calls Kenny all kinds of shit, which should get him knocked the fuck out. But then when they have the fight, it is played for laughs, like an episode of Looney Tunes.
Yeah,
Spencer's doing fake kung fu, and then
it was very weird. He like jumps over the net and like onto his
net.
Shoulder, and then they're like, whoa.
And what I noticed was when he's on
an airplane
his shoulder,
around each other, it's very weird.
Well, it's like logic dictates you just like slam this man onto the ground.
Correct.
But if you look at it, I don't know if it was supposed to be this way or if it just happened because of the physicality of the scene. Glenn Turman's foot is stuck on the net for a long time.
That was funny.
And
that's
so you can't lift him over because his foot is like hooked on the net.
He's probably nervous of falling over. He's like, maybe his ankle really was messed up. I have no idea. But at that point, if you're at the net, perfect height right there, strip to the waist, fisticuffs.
Yeah.
Right there.
Just have a fist fight.
It gives you a little distance from each other, but they don't want to punch. That's why I didn't believe this was serious.
No, because he does get punched in the face. Glenn Turman gets punched
once.
In the face.
Oh,
and then
really
he covers his mouth. Well, he cusses his mouth. I'm like, well, what are we, what is this? Like, what are we doing?
So I have two thoughts on the fight. They did not have a stunt coordinator to help them stage
this. Oh, really?
They didn't have Frank Dukes setting up the fight like last week.
Dukes.
Yeah, good old Frank Dukes.
Correct.
Oh my
And secondarily, as we've already discussed, you get one take. The camera set is rolling. Whatever
That's
happens
fair.
is what happens.
Fair. Yeah.
We gotta lock. Gotta lock and move on, guys.
God, just so
go
fucking
with it.
bizarre.
Whatever happens, just go. It'll be fine. We'll make it work.
So that is kind of the culmination of the dispute between these two men. We understand from the moment he walks out of the house that Glenn Turman is the villain in the movie. Like, he is.
Did we need like, a villain? It's so weird.
I don't think we did. And to the extent that we did, there are better villains in the movie that would have made more sense. We'll talk about Harold. Harold as a villain makes sense. Jada Pinkett's boyfriend as a villain would have made sense. Making Glenn Turman the villain, I'm like, I mean, he's healing it up on screen whenever he is on the screen. And he says so many things that mark him as like the villainous type of black character that really resonates if you have a large black family. Like my parents, my dad used to be in a biker gang when he was young. He joined another one when he retired that was literally just old men on trikes. I think they might have had motorcycles at first, and then they all just transitioned to trikes. But one of the couples in this bike gang are like rich black Republicans, and my parents talk so much shit about them all the time. And it's like, yes, that is Glenn Turman is like them. It's the same way that if you've seen the Key and Peele Black Republican sketch of Malcolm Jamal Warner, it's the same thing. Where it's just, you haven't seen it? It's Key and Peele both play black Republicans, and so does Malcolm Jamal Warner, and they all dress the exact same with the same haircut and the same glasses. And then they go to like a meeting of black Republicans, and Malcolm Jamal Warner gets up and he's like, I'm pissed. I'm royally pissed. The media wants to talk about us like we're a monolith. Oh, we are not a monolith. I am pissed. And then Peele gets up and goes, I'm pissed. I'm royally pissed. And they do the exact same speech over and over again. And it's like they are in, like, I think denim jackets and, like, jeans with, like, a braided belt and, like, a crew neck sweatshirt. Every man in the room, they all look the exact same. It's quality. But that's what this dude is. And, yeah, this is an archetype that we don't see a whole lot of. But I recognize it, and I'm like, yeah, I know this guy, and like he's trouble. Avoid this man. The fight over MLK and Malcolm X. I thought I remembered only one scene from this movie, and it's like a guitar string when you pluck it. Turns out I remembered that. I remembered the guys in the car on the way to Jungle Beach shouting biddies and titties over and over again. Because I
biddies and
why.
Titties and titties.
Biddies and titties and titties.
Just keep saying titties.
Biddies and titties and titties. And then I remembered Glenn Turman calling Malcolm X a common Harlem hoodlum. And I'm like, I know that line. Forgot that's where this came from. But like, yeah, just in case you weren't sure he's a villain, he goes out of his way to like slander Malcolm X, say that he wasn't murdered and he was just a common Harlem hoodlum who got what he deserved from the common Harlem hoodlums he hung out with. And I'm like, well, now this is Keith David type villain behavior. Like, this is bad. You can't, this is awful. Pretty sure Spencer hates black people. He's basically Clarence Thomas. His whole performance is giving, I got mine, fuck you. Like, that's basically what it is. There's a part where they're talking about the beach, the inkwell. And I would say that Kenny gets irrationally angry at this conversation, but he's basically, the point is like, okay, great. You've made it here. Everyone on this beach has made it here. What about all the black people who have not risen to your level? Like, what about them? And his response is, I guess they can go to Coney Island. And I'm like, that feels racist. Never been to Coney Island. But the reaction to that was like, oh, how dare you say something like that? This is not the villain the movie needed, but he plays the villain fairly well.
It could work if Joe Morton is the main character. It's like you can't have a villain who barely interacts with the lead weirdo, you know?
And
like,
doesn't do anything villainous to him. He's never a villain to Lorenz Tate.
No. So
or
that
a Junior, like, part... for that matter. You got to show him a hit Junior at some point.
It just didn't.
It was ham-fisted. And then, as Dana said, they had a reconciliation that felt wholly unearned. Like, if this was a movie about these two guys coming to recognize, like, the dignity of one another, this would be multiple scenes that then culminate in, like, a serious bit of dialogue and some kind of rapprochement. Instead, we get them having this Three Stooges fist fight. And then we just see them later on, like, yucking it up and saying they forgive one another. And I'm like, no, they one of them, I can't sleep in your house now. Like, I need to go somewhere. Like, this is not, we can't, like, get waffles tomorrow morning now.
Well, I think that's what happens, like, over and over again in the movie. There's just, like, there's this thing, then it's over. And you're like, well, what happened in between, though? You know, like, it's just...
There's no connective tissue to any of this. That's true.
Yeah, it is wild.
Yeah. So, next relationship here to talk about is Drew and Lauren. Lauren is Jada Pinkett. Mm-hmm. She sucks. She's horrible. Yeah. Like, she sucks. Yeah. She's very good looking because she's young Jada Pinkett. But she has chosen to weaponize her good looks against Drew, I think, the moment she sees him, basically. Drew sees her, he sees her first, like, out the window, and is very excited that this girl is doing bad Tai Chi, I guess, on the beach. Whoa. Okay.
Yeah.
Fair.
There's something.
Then he sees her. Was she at the dance that he went to, or was that other girls he tried to go talk to?
No, she was there. He tried to go talk to her.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So he tried to go talk to her, and, like, that didn't go well because he has no game whatsoever. Then he sees her at the beach, and we see her ex-boyfriend walk by with another girl, and she's, like, staring at her ex, and it's very clear to anyone watching, oh, you're just being used by her to, like, try to make her ex jealous. He goes to take her out. I think she calls the house. I didn't see him give her the number, but I guess she called the house looking for him while he was out. He gets back home, finds out that she's called for him, and then, like, hops on his tandem bike and goes to her house. Damn near knocks the door down. I mean, he is banging on this fucking door to talk to this girl.
Very uncomfortable.
And then she's like, I don't remember calling you, but I guess you're here now. So, like, this is when she just starts making demands. I want to go downtown to the arcade. Take me there. I want to drive your bike. Like, go steal me a lobster. Like, what the fuck is going on? They have this date at the arcade, which seems to go well. She's laughing and having a good time with him. And he's like, well, do you want to go to the movies? And she's like, no, I'm hungry. He's like, all right, let's get pizza. And she acts like this is, like he said, let's go eat some dookie. And so then she's like, no, I want lobster. And he's like, bitch, I can't afford lobster. I'm 16. So right? She takes me to the beach and is like, hey, there's lobster traps at the bottom of this beach. Just dive 30 feet down. You can't swim. No, go down and get me a lobster out of the trap.
You can do it.
Is lobster cheaper when you're in, like, the New England area? Is it, like, less per pound?
It has to be cheaper, right?
Maybe in the 70s, but let me tell you, I'd find it more when I've been out that way to Cape Cod and such. Just as expensive. No cheaper.
Jesus Christ. Because the corn here is cheap as shit. So they ought to lower the price.
Corn part's fine. The whole boil thing, maybe that part's cheaper. But if you're ordering a piece of fish or a lobster or something out in Cape Cod.
Lobster.
It's gonna
be just expensive. So this simping ass knows he can't swim, but dives to the bottom of the ocean to open up a lobster trap and then comes up with a goddamn lobster.
She throws him in the water.
She does. He's like, I can't swim. She's like, I don't give a fuck. Hope you drown. Throws him in the water.
And somehow he's able to come up with a lobster and not drown.
And not get pinched by a lobster. Just holding a lobster around, flopping it everywhere. Yeah. So they have this date. He takes her home. They don't kiss or anything, but like he's very excited that he talked to a girl, basically. We have Heather and Harold, another relationship in this movie. I've never been to Martha's Vineyard. I need to look to see right now the square mileage of Martha's Vineyard because this does not make sense. Martha's Vineyard square. Oh my God. It's big as hell. Okay. It's 87 and a half square miles. It's a lot bigger than I thought it was because the reason I'm asking is like Harold is just having a whole ass affair out in the wide open in front of God and everybody as though he just cannot be caught. When we first meet him, he's at the nude beach. He's at Jungle Beach with another woman.
That's right, not the first time we meet him.
Where do we meet him first?
On the tennis courts.
That was before? Mm-hmm. No. Was that before they went to the nude beach?
Yeah.
I thought they went to the nude beach first. Then he didn't see him at the tennis court because he was too busy looking at his wife. And then he recognized him when they went to the house. Either way, he's at the nude beach, like rubbing lotion on this other woman in the middle of the day, right past like the clothing optional sign. So like anybody that goes to his beach will see him. He'd have a fake mustache or anything. He's just out here being himself, having an affair. And then later we see him walking with the other woman in broad daylight. And then they just go like make out where anybody walking past would see them. And so in my mind, Martha's Vineyard is like one square mile. It's big as hell. So maybe you can do this, but I'm just like, this seems like you're trying to get caught, man.
Yeah. So I reviewed my notes because I wrote in all caps, exclamation point, Morris Chestnut. Because goddamn. So we see Morris Chestnut. We go to the tennis courts. They're at the party at the house. And at one point, like Heather gets up and goes outside because she needs air. That's when she first meets Drew. Then they go to the nude beach. Then there's some other things. So like he has seen Harold a number of times. So this is, I will say this, in this moment, I was unclear how old Heather and Harold were supposed to be.
I still don't know.
Okay.
3 years before this, like, Morris Chestnut is playing a high school student. So I have no idea.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they're not the same age as the parents, because that's very clear. But I'm like, are these contemporaries? Are they the same age as Junior? Like, what? They're married? Oh, they're married? Oh, okay.
You could convince me they are 20. You can convince me they're 35. I don't know. Black don't crack, so I have no idea how old they are at all. They could be 15. These young married couple. I don't know.
Morris Chestnut could play this role right now.
And it'd be sure could. He played just now. Yes, and I've not seen this woman since this movie, but like I bet she could still do it too. So there's another relationship here, because again, this movie is just interpersonal relationships. Drew and the therapist. Did anyone need this to be part of this movie?
No. Take out this. Take out the doll.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, no doll. There's no need for therapist.
There it is. Take it all out. Don't need it.
I think if like we get to see a clip of them all in therapy together, and then it ends. So we see 3 minutes of it. And they are just now potentially talking about the fire and the doll. I'm like, what the fuck have you been doing for the previous 57 minutes? Because this, you should be further along in this discussion. So like, I think the therapist helps Drew come out of his shell, but like, what and how and why? Like, we were shown, because she does his hair.
Yeah.
So he gains his trust, but like, what else?
The family goes to the therapist. The dad's like, fix my weird fucking son. And that's basically it. Then we see him go back to the therapist on his own. And he's like, oh, I like your hair because she's got locks. And he's like, she's like, oh, because it's different, right? And he's like, yeah. So then she does his hair, takes out what is a truly offensive Afro wig. This thing... Like, these are black people. Just have them grow an afro for the future film that they're in. Yeah, this was absurd.
Time. They shot the movie in 2 weeks.
The both afro wigs look terrible. So she braids his hair, gives him twists, basically. Yeah. And then after that, the next time we see her is at the very end of the movie. So it's like, if this movie is all about this 16-year-old with an imaginary friend coming on vacation... and like spending all of his time with this therapist instead of at the beach and sorting out what's going on with himself. Okay, that's not a movie I want to see, but it's a movie. Instead, we just get these like three disjointed scenes, and it feels like she made some huge impact on him in scenes that they just didn't show us. And right. I want to gauge your impression on this. Did anyone else think he was also in love with the therapist?
Yeah.
Okay. She appeared maybe to be the same age as Heather. She was young, good looking lady.
She was in love with she was in love with him a little bit.
See, I mean, she's over here braiding his hair. So I mean, perhaps.
I don't know.
So yeah, it just I didn't need any of it. And you strip out all of their scenes, all of the doll stuff. Now you've got an hour and a half movie that you could make focus on one of these three things, and they just chose to do all of them instead. Yeah. And then the last relationship here, finally, is Drew and Heather. The fuck was this? This was bananas.
I didn't like it at all. This
could have been its own movie. Just this awkward teenage boy who has a crush on a full-blown adult woman and like spends the whole summer trying to figure out a way to shoot a shot. Instead, it feels like this woman does not see him as any kind of a sexual being for the whole movie until the end when she is suddenly DTF.
She got cheated on.
And he's there. I mean, sometimes...
So I'm going to get my groove back with a weird 16-year-old kid?
I don't know.
with a weird 16-year-old.
You get to turn down
a tandem bike.
The Indecent Proposal song. I mean, this is no ordinary love. I mean, that's gross, but that's kind of what it felt like. I'm like, yeah, she's like, he'll be real mad about this. He'll be really mad. He's 16, right? And she is.
He's 16. She's older than 16. She's an adult. Yeah. Well, a married adult.
I feel like these are movies. Like, it happens in movies. I don't love it. I think we've dealt with this before. There's a JLo one where she fucks the kid next door. Isn't that just called the boy next door?
The boy next door.
Yeah. Let's do it for the pod.
He's a teen. We could do it. It's insane. Definitely do it.
I think I've seen parts of it.
I've seen the whole thing. It's nuts.
I was just like, why? What? And like, we're going to talk about it in like the next. I guess we have to talk about it, but it just doesn't make any sense. I think it could have and should have just ended with a kiss and then that's it. And just like, hey, because remember,
I didn't need that either.
No, I don't. I agree. I don't want it either. But like, when the person they meet, like he, and this is where I was like, oh, they must be contemporaries. Because, like, she trips on the tennis court. He goes and picks her up. He recites some chivalry thing. I'm like, oh, that's sweet. We're showing that, like, this is the side of Drew that, like, people could get behind if they just got to know him. And then, like, they're sitting out on the rocks. And she's like, oh, I met your parents. Da-da-da. And I was just like, oh, okay. So she's not a contemporary. Oh, okay.
Well,
and then she gives him, a bike ride home. And you're like, and, you know... She's seen having a good time with him, and Lauren sees it. So it's like, oh, this could help him with girls his own age, because like, look at this grown woman having a good time with him. Like, there's like those things, and then it just goes to this point of like, wait, what? Now they're fucking.
And Dana, when they first met, there's a line that she says that makes this a lot worse. And I don't know if this is specifically a Black thing, because my mom uses this term to refer to all my friends that are adults now. But she's like, oh, I met your parents. You're Kenny and Brenda's little boy. And I'm like, the fact that you're calling him a little boy.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, Dave, my mom calls you a little boy. Like, it's just it's a thing that my mom does to all of my adult friends. Correct. Like, insane that she's like, oh, I met your parents, you're their little boy. 2 weeks later, like, you're gonna clap these cheeks. Fucking crazy.
I was like, oh, they're not contemporaries. Second she called him, oh, you're Kenny and Brenda's little boy, I was like, oh, okay.
Yes.
So she is not the same age.
She's 40.
What?
Clap these cheeks,
Brian.
Clap these cheeks in 2 weeks. Yeah, that's what happens. Clap them cheeks on the beach. I think this next scene is the reason that in my mind this whole movie was a horny movie. Like, it's not, It's fairly chaste until the end when it's not. But
what a fucking slap in the face.
So we get a sex talk here between Kenny and Drew. Can anyone explain Kenny's analogy? Because I don't fucking get it.
Well, tell the folks. I don't want to say okay. Tell the folks.
Okay, so they're out fishing, and Kenny basically is like, "All right, so it's time for a sex talk.
Let's talk
You're
about
16,
sex, baby. Let's
this is late as fuck. Like, we should have done this years ago. I guess we have to now." Mm-hmm. But he's basically like, "Okay, so you're 16. You know, you're gonna be alone with girls pretty soon. Blah blah blah." And he's like, "Honestly, if you have any questions at all, you can come and ask me." And then Drew's first question, right out of the box, not like, how do you kiss a girl? How do you know if a girl likes you? His very first question is, what's a clitoris? I was like, oh, Jesus. we're starting off at full speed. And,
you know, let's get straight at it. Let's get to the important stuff.
Yes. And very important. And Kenny's response is, he stammers for a long time, and then what he comes around to is, it's like a guitar string if you pluck it.
Yeah, man.
I remember bing, that bing, line. Bing, First of all, Drew is not asking him, what do I do with it? Yeah. He was like, okay, but what is it?
You sit behind it and then you play guitar. Yeah, that's exactly what he means. That's what
I think
meant.
You're right. I think in Kenny's mind, though, it's like, the only thing you need to know about the clitoris is what to do with it. I don't need to tell you what it is, where it is.
Like, what to look for.
Well, it's still 76. Well, Joy of Sex probably came out. So, yeah, it's known.
Drew knows the word.
No, but like 10, 15 years before this, it was like, excuse me. It's a myth. Voodoo bullshit.
It's just made up. Doesn't exist.
What the fuck are you talking about? Clitoris, which, not a thing.
Not to get graphic, like, it's, you can see it. So it's not like, oh, you're making it up. It's like, no, it's literally this part right here. Like,
looking at it back in those days.
I guess not.
They're just like, well, there's that. Okay, moving on.
Don't know what that thing is.
Yeah.
So yeah. So the analogy
of vestigial organ. It can't work.
It's purely ornamental.
Yes.
But for him
just
to
like
say
my male nipples,
they're useless.
I have nipples, Greg.
Keep up me. But yeah, to say it's like a guitar string if you pluck it, and then Drew is like, but I don't understand, how could I pluck? And then it just comes together in his mind, and they say it like 10 times, like high fiving and laughing. And I'm like, I still don't know what you're talking about.
No, I get it.
Please.
No, you dance around the string. You fiddle around. Well, this is different. You're obviously
what
doing
your
stuff with
this. What
is your
hand doing?
I was like, you along with that, you make beautiful music, and you also deep make. You go really like.
Why do you have a whammy bar on it?
Well, not like a whammy bar. Like
you have a Bigsby on it.
It's about plucking. It's about a certain amount of plucking and
got a capon on there too.
And you're like palm muting on it, like
all of a sudden you're Scott.
You hear what I'm saying? This is what he's talking about. He's like
apparently
similar, but it's weird.
Just explaining, hey man, here's where you can find it would be helpful for him.
I think if we knew that maybe Drew played guitar, maybe that would be helpful. But it is weird to say it's like a guitar string when you pluck it. Like, yeah. I think it is the vibration part, like a guitar string, you pluck it. Like, it's where the like is. Like, it's the sequence of words.
Because if you don't pluck it, then what is it like? Like, I just don't. It was a weird answer to this.
Somehow
it worked.
Like, what is it?
It's kind of, it's there until you like do something with it, I guess.
It's there until you do
something. Guitar strings are there even if you don't pluck them.
That's true.
They are there.
My guitar is in eye shot right now. You're right. It's sitting right there.
It's still there.
We never made that analogy, but I'll do better with my son. So yeah, just the tell movie
is like
I'll just show him the scene.
Son, dad, I'm very young. Dad, please don't do this. Dad,
I'm not barely now. Five. I am yes, barely please. 5 years old.
Please well, stop. Please
there's
stop.
This thing that it's like a guitar
string. If you pluck it. Okay, so the movie all culminates on the 4th of July. It's the bicentennial of 76. A series of things happen in a row. First of all, I don't think they had the rights to a Sousa march. They made like a, it sounded a lot like that, but it wasn't that song.
They didn't have the rights to much of anything. A lot of the music in this movie is Muzak or covers at the dance.
They had the rights to a cover of Dancing Machine, mm-hmm. which I dig that cover. It was fine. So on the 4th of July, Lauren and Drew are supposed to have a date. Drew puts on his finest short sleeve button up and tie like he's Dwight Schrute. And then he goes to go pick up Lauren with some flowers. He rings the doorbell for like 10 minutes and there's no answer. And finally he comes to the realization he's been stood up. That's a bummer.
He waits for a while. All the lights are on the house. He sits on the doorstep. He waits.
He's hanging out. He's hanging out. He also exposes Harold for cheating. And this, like I said, I watched this while I was working. What?
No.
Okay, so first of all, he waits for Harold to get in his car and then pulls two dumbbells on some kind of a string system to block the doors.
Goldberg.
It's a Rube Goldberg setup. Yeah. So he pulls a string that somehow like drags two dumbbells to block the doors of the car from opening up. And then I think were those like ransom notes inside the car? Do you like?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's notes inside of the car. I missed the first couple. The last ones were like, cheaters never prosper. And then like, bang, you're dead. And I'm like, well, now we're making death threats. So that's a felony. And then he lights a wick, like a very long wick. He's in the bushes. Uh-huh. So he lights a wick. That is 30 feet, 40 feet long. And inside the car, Morris Chestnut's trying to get out. And he sees this like wick burning towards him. Probably assumes the car is going to blow up in a second.
Yeah.
And he's like scrambling. Yeah. He's scrambling to get out, trying to kick the windows out. Finally, just like punches a hole in the convertible top and like jumps out of the car. As a bunch of black cats go off. So I guess he just had like firecrackers hooked up to this whole thing. So at that point, in my mind, you've done it. You have gotten your revenge on Harold for cheating on a woman you barely know. Like you've done it. That's not enough for him. I blinked and missed how the wine bottle thing all came together.
So
help me out with this.
We shouldn't have seen it. So this is what they do a lot in this movie, is they, like, with the doll, he takes it out of his bag to talk to it and show it to you.
He does.
Same thing here. So when Harold's going out to the car, he puts his, like, suitcase in the back, but then, like, opens it up and, like, shows us a bottle of wine. Okay. And, like, all this stuff. It's, yeah.
So on the 4th of July, Harold is getting ready to, he is ready to go to the parade. And he's like yelling at Heather for not being ready fast enough, which it's not going to help her get fast, get ready any faster. Mm-hmm. She walks out of the bedroom holding the wine bottle. And he's like, no, that was a gift from a client. We just closed the deal, whatever. And then he's like, get the fuck out of here, you son of a bitch. Like, she blows up at him. He leaves. And then she has a meltdown that for a moment, I had to look at IMDb. I thought she played Morris Chestnut's mom in Boys in the Hood. Because it was a very similar. I'm like, oh my God, that was mother and son 3 years ago. And now they're a married couple. Just a woman who looks a lot like her. But yeah, she's got like, she has a full meltdown when her husband leaves. Then for some reason, Drew goes back over to Lauren's house. And I don't know why he would do this. Hours have passed. It's dark outside now.
No. He does the stuff with Harold before. That's the morning.
That was the morning?
Yeah.
It was dark outside when he drove away, wasn't it?
No. Oh, no. So No. Okay. So Drew the
firecrackers was like, that was, yes, that was earlier in the day.
I don't think Drew ever leaves Lauren's house. He goes there and he
Oh my God.
Yes.
Hold on. Oh no! This is so much darker than I thought it was. Okay, so what he looks in the window. I guess he is still holding the flowers, isn't he?
Uh-huh.
So he's been there for 6 hours,
and he waits.
She loves me. She loves me not.
Just waits and waits and waits. All of a sudden, the light is on in the window, which I was like, "Did they come in through the back door? What happened?"
I think they might have been in the house fucking all day.
Okay, but they finally had to turn the lights on because it got dark outside. Okay,
yeah. They turn the lights on. He looks in the window and he sees Jada Pinkett and her ex-boyfriend, like they're making out, but they're just in their underwear and they're standing up. And in my notes, I'm like, that looks so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like nothing seems less comfortable to me than just standing up in my underwear, making out with a woman also in her underwear. Let's go lay down. Let's go sit on a couch at least. But like standing here is uncomfortable as shit for me.
They needed it to be that way.
They could have put a couch there.
So Drew they could have put a couch standing in the window, extra close, breath on the glass level close.
Yeah.
And Jada to see him.
And she sees him. And it was nice that the ex-boyfriend did not see him. So she's just like staring at him, looking guilty, but not like, oh my God, we should stop. I have to go talk to this guy. She's like, yeah, he's just still like sucking on my neck. And I'm just looking at you feeling bad, basically. So Lorenz Tate gets the one tear from Glory. And then he just takes off running. Now that I know how big Martha's Vineyard is, he might run for 90 miles. He runs for a long time. It's like watching Boogaloo Shrimp in Breakin' 2 just run for a very long time. He runs, he runs so long. Like, I get it. Okay. You've seen something that's made you emotionally upset. Running might help you deal with that. But like after like 3 blocks, you start walking again. You don't just sprint all night long. No, but like he runs so long. He runs like you running out of a frat house, Dana, in the middle of the winter, just running across campus.
Got to hoof it, man. But, down mountain.
Well, he is running for so long. He winds up like running across the parade in the middle of downtown. Then he winds up on the beach where he sees Heather being sad and alone. And this is where we get Heather and Drew having sex amongst the reeds. Nothing has ever seemed less fun to me than having sex on a beach.
They had a sand everywhere. Down.
Well, they cocktail, good cocktail, bad idea, because there's butt sand. It's a real thing.
Butt sand if you're lucky. Like you put a blanket down. Okay, cool.
Are you talking urethra sand, both female and male? Uh-huh. Oh no,
there's
other holes you could go in too.
Oh boy,
narrow your reedy. so
horse your tips. Narrow your reedy,
bump jockey. Narrow your reedy. So they have little talk. And then Drew does what I think is the logical thing. And he's like, I'll leave you alone to grieve, basically. And then she's like, no, you stay here and clap these cheeks. And they make out a little bit.
Stop saying that.
I will never stop saying it. They make out a little bit. And then they don't have sex on the beach
proper. Clap those cheeks.
They don't have sex on the beach proper, which probably for the best. They walk inland some distance, and then they're in like waist-high tall grasses. That feels like you're in a lot of paper cuts. That just feels like a bad time.
Yeah, there's a blanket there in the morning. That's fine.
There's a blanket there. Well, and he fell asleep, and I'm like, buddy, like this was not 2 a.m. Like it's probably like 9 p.m. if it's anything. Like go the fuck home after this.
No, but he was waiting wrong. I thought he had to pick up Lauren at 8. I think the timeline, it gets sketchy. It's
very confusing. It's very confusing. But in any event, they have sex. And the next morning he wakes up, he talks to her a little bit. And she's just like, goodbye, Drew. And then just like walks off. Because I think she's like, I might have committed some statutory rape. I need to get the fuck out of here. Yeah. Then he goes back to the house. He talks to Junior. Junior wants all the details about the sex that he had with Lauren the night before. And he's like, well, I wasn't with Lauren. And then we get the gross thing. I've never had a friend actually do this. Smells his fingers and is like, very excited by this. Oh yeah. Grabs his hand, smells his fingers, and then is like, you stay right here. I'm gonna go call all the guys. And I'm like, I need to call all the guys.
Yeah.
That's basically
he didn't wash his hands and just be like, hey guys, he didn't wash his hand, whatever he did.
He didn't that's basically that's it. Like, yeah, his family leaves. Junior like runs out. And I was like, hey, man, you never told me who it was as they're driving away. And then, yeah, grandma just waving at nobody. Goodbye. And that's how this movie ends. It is a mess. It's a mess that could have been three good movies. Instead, they made one that is not very good. So one of the things we like doing on this pod is taking a look at a minor character to see if this movie was the start of big things, the peak of their whole career. So it's time for an IMDb deep dive. This week, we're going to dive on Reggie McFadden, who plays MC Madman, like the MC at the dance that they go to at the beginning. He's kind of a that guy for me. I recognized his face, and I wasn't sure from where. So he has 14 total credits. This was his seventh. His first role was in Jacob's Ladder in 1990, Jason Mantzoukas favorite. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He then was in Def Comedy Jam in 1991. Which led to him getting a role in one episode of Martin. I've seen the episode. I forget what it is. I think he's I think he's super annoying with bad BO is the thing with his character. He's got on like a very bright turquoise suit, like an Arsenio Hall turquoise suit, basically. But I think he's supposed to be like annoying and smelly is the character that he played. Then he was in the Inkwell. After this, he was in 23 episodes as a cast member of In Living Color. Don't get excited. It was the last two seasons when the glory days were over. It was the last two bad seasons of that show. He was in an episode of Moesha, and then he was in Little Nicky and an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, Motiva. And then his last credit was in something called Road Kings in 2003 as a character named Psycho. So whenever I see that somebody's last credit was that long ago, I'm like, oh my God, did they die? So I did some research. Reggie McFadden was found guilty of murder and sentenced to 25 years to life. When he was sentenced, he showed no remorse and blamed society for making him the way that he is. Turns out that's a different man named Reggie McFadden.
Because I thought that. I was like, yo, is this guy a serial killer?
That's what I thought. I was like, oh my God, he's a serial killer? And then I looked at the picture. I'm like, that's not him. Totally different guy. That guy was a serial killer and repeat rapist who had been out of prison for like, I think he'd been out for like 2 months after serving several years for rape and then committed more rapes and murders like right away.
It was like 3 months. July 7th, 1994, October 6th, 1994.
Yeah. He got out and started committing crimes again immediately. So this Reggie McFadden just kind of faded away, apparently. There's a website where you can book him for your upcoming event. But on that website, it says he's currently starring in Curb Your Enthusiasm. He was in one episode in 2001 as police officer number two. So to say that he's currently starring in Curb Your Enthusiasm feels insane to say. So yeah, that's it. I think I might recognize him from like Comic View. I feel like if you did Def Comedy Jam, you probably also were on Comic View. I used to watch a lot of Comic View. So maybe that's where I know him from. But like he just, you know, he's got one of those faces that I recognized. And
yeah, that's correct. Background. It was only 2 months later, but it took them a month to find him.
Yeah.
Raping and murdering people immediately. Of both sexes.
Right away. Got out of jail and was like, I'm going right back in. So, yeah, he was on one. So that does bring us to the end of this episode. And just like the end of the school year, that means it's time to nut some superlatives. Lauren is most likely to say, I do like you, just not like that. Junior is most likely to do the robot at every wedding he attends, and Drew is most likely to get a twinkle in his eye every time he remembers the bicentennial. This next movie is Dana's pick. Dana, what are we going to watch next?
I just want to clarify again. The serial killer rapist is not the actor.
Reggie McFadden.
It is a different person named Reginald McFadden. Okay, So the movie I had jokingly, and I haven't finished it, so it's partially why I didn't pick this. I was gonna pick the movie Priscilla because she's fucking 14.
She's a teen. She's a little,
and she is in school. We do get to see scenes of her in Catholic school in the film.
Gross.
Yep, but it felt inappropriate. Yeah, I don't. I'm not. I have to finish
it. Just pick Lolita and get it over with.
I know. And then I was like, oh, should I pick a different Sofia Coppola film? And I was like, no, oh, no. I don't want to pick.
There's one, and don't pick it. It's too sad. That was a bummer.
So then I was like, oh, it was Black History Month, and we didn't pick. I picked Breaking, so that's kind of a historical black movie. But we're in March, and it's March Madness. So what's a great black basketball film that we have not done yet?
Yes.
I don't know. I have one in mind.
We are doing Love and Basketball.
Okay, oh, not the one I had in mind.
Oh,
yeah. I thought it was gonna be the sixth man.
Oh, sixth man with Kadeem Hardison.
NC2A, baby.
Are those we can just teams? Do
basketball all there. He's in college. He plays at Washington.
Close enough.
He plays at UW. I've
definitely seen that movie a ton. It's can we do Above the Rim too? Are those high school kids?
We could do Above the Rim. We can do Sunset Park.
Air Up There. But not I was going to say we could do The Air Up There.
The Air Up There is a college movie. It's a college film.
And yeah, he is recruiting.
Jimmy Dolan, Shake and Bake. Yeah.
Jimmy Dolan, Shake and Bake. He's recruiting for St. Joe's. Yeah. God damn it. That movie is a disaster, and I might pick it next. So, guys.
I loved that movie as a kid.
I saw it in the theater. I loved it as a kid. I know if I watch it now, I'm going to be like, oh, my God. Like, this is horribly offensive.
Oh, yeah. But,
yeah. Guys. That does it for this week's episode. If you like what you heard, be sure to subscribe, rate, and leave us a 5-star review. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Recap and Gown Pod. That is RECAPNGOWNPOD. And join our Facebook group, the Recap and Gown Fan Club. We'll keep the discussion going in there all week. If you guys have any opinions or memories of this movie, we'd love for you to jump in and let us know what you think. But if you didn't like what you heard, to quote Junior, are you on dope or something? Have you been sniffing glue? Take it easy, millennials. We'll see you next week.